Welcome to Bloomberg Philanthropies Follow the Data, our podcast about how we're driving change and making an impact in the areas of education, the arts, the environment, public health, and government innovation. I'm your host, Catherine Oliver. Here's how our podcast works. Our founder, Mike Bloomberg, is a strong believer that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Data-driven strategies are at the core of Bloomberg Philanthropy's work. So to that theme, we'll start every episode with a key data point that gives insight into a problem we're addressing through Bloomberg Philanthropy's unique approach. From there, our guests will share how our work and the work of our partners impacts the data. In our first episode, we're going to talk about how our work with the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign is working to end America's reliance on coal and shifting the U.S. power sector to a cleaner future. Here's our data point today. Coal burning is responsible for one-third of U.S. carbon emissions, the main contributor to climate change. But it's also making Americans sick, leading to as many as 13,000 premature deaths every year and more than $100 billion in annual health costs. This is a significant problem, and the coal industry is not an easy one to fight. But progress is being made every day through the Beyond Coal campaign. Now let's hear from Antha Williams, the Environment Program Lead at Bloomberg Philanthropies, and Marianne Hitt, the Director of the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign, as they reflect on the goals, the strategy, and the grassroots work that has made Beyond Coal one of the most effective campaigns to cut carbon emissions in history. They join us by phone.
Well, in 2011, Sierra Club was able to dramatically expand their successful organizing and litigation work. Mike Bloomberg came in with a $50 million commitment to the Beyond Coal campaign, and it was certainly up to that point the largest single commitment to an advocacy campaign of this type. The campaign went so well from 2011 to 2015 with the Sierra Club successfully blocking about 200 proposed plants, but also beginning to be even more ambitious in retiring some of the existing plants through community opposition and really smart litigation, that Mike Bloomberg came in with an additional $30 million and went out to other donors and matched it with another $30 million. So in total, Bloomberg has brought more than $100 million to this effort, and I think has really seen Sierra Club and the Beyond Coal campaign as the most effective environmental campaign in U.S. history. Marianne, it'd be interesting to hear from you about how you came to the Beyond Coal campaign, because I think it's so evocative of the local work that Sierra Club does around the U.S.
Thank you, first of all, for the kind words about the campaign and for the conversation. And I do think my entry point into this work is a microcosm of not only how a lot of people have found their way into the work to move the U.S. beyond coal, but it's one of the secrets behind why the campaign has been so effective and so resilient over the years. So I live in West Virginia now. When I started working on coal issues, I was the executive director of a grassroots organization called Appalachian Voices, and we were trying to stop mountaintop removal, which is a type of mining where they blow up entire mountains to get at the coal that is inside of them because it is more profitable, it uses less workers, and as you can imagine, it's extremely destructive when you blow up an entire mountain. It makes people living around those sites suffer from a lot of health problems. It destroys the ecosystem, and so we were trying to stop this type of mining, and there were a couple of new coal-fired power plants proposed in Appalachia. And so we started fighting those new coal plants because we thought, well, you know, if you build new coal plants in Appalachia, it's going to be that much harder to stop the mountains from being blown up. I am the mom of a little girl who is an 11th generation West Virginian through my husband's side of the family. So I really saw this as her kind of her birthright and her legacy, that we safeguard the mountains of the Mountain State. And So we started fighting these new coal plants only to realize we weren't alone. We started meeting people all around the rest of the country who were also fighting new coal plants, and it turns out there were over 200 coal plants proposed around the country during the early 2000s, and had those been built, they would have meant game over for the climate. They would have really made it impossible for us to transition to clean energy. People are brought into this work for a whole bunch of different reasons, and that's one of the reasons I think we have been so successful.
It's a great story, Marianne. I love it, and as the mother of young daughters too, as you know, I was already working on environmental issues, but my commitment to this type of work that has such a direct impact on what the quality of their lives will be like has certainly increased, a millionfold since my first daughter was born 5 years ago. I think one of the things that is really, from my perspective, having worked both with activist groups and then with donors, is the scale of the Bloomberg commitment to Sierra Club, this $80 million, which was is pretty atypical in how targeted that money was to this single effort to get the job done. So one of the big changes that I've seen that this enabled in the Sierra Club was the growth from what was a somewhat ad hoc grassroots campaign, like you described in West Virginia, to this really national movement in 50 states across the U.S. And so can you talk a little bit about what that scale-up was like and what the Sierra Club campaign now looks like in some of these communities around the country?
It's decisions at the state and local level primarily that are the drivers of America's energy future. It's not necessarily happening on Wall Street, and it's not necessarily happening in Washington, D.C. And I credit Bloomberg Philanthropies with recognizing that very early on. And to really be engaged in these decisions, which are made, for example, in a state utility commission proceeding or in a state legislature or potentially in a city council or a mayor's office, it does take some resources. You know, it helps to have a paid organizer. It helps to have attorneys who can read through the fine print for you and make a legal challenge if needed. It helps to have some communications resources. And so to do that for a campaign that is trying to affect local decisions in 40-plus states, it requires a significant investment if you want to make a difference at the scale that we need to stop a climate crisis. And so I definitely credit Bloomberg Philanthropies with not only coming in with the scale of resources that were really needed to accelerate all of our progress, but also bringing this very data-driven approach to the advocacy so that when we said, look, we think that by 2015, one-third of the coal plants in the U.S. can be announced for retirement, we did not just pull that number out of the air. That was created as a result of a huge amount of analysis of the trends in the electric sector and market forces, and that data-driven approach to our advocacy is really something that I think came to fruition and really to maturity through our partnership with Bloomberg Philanthropies.
How do you think the local work Sierra Club is doing on Beyond Coal relates to the global climate fight, especially coming out of the ambitious goal set in Paris this past December when nations around the world came together to reach a new climate treaty?
I have worked side by side in places like Chicago and Indianapolis and Asheville and North Omaha with the community groups that won these campaigns to retire coal plants and replace them with clean energy. And I know that the success in Paris was built from the ground up, that it came up from the grassroots and up from the American people. And it was local moms and dads and folks working in their communities who were trying to deal with asthma attacks and air pollution and contaminated water and who wanted a clean energy future for their communities that won these very complicated David and Goliath campaigns to retire their local coal plants and replace them with clean energy. And that's the success that is the foundation of the commitment that the U.S. made in Paris to reduce our carbon emissions. And so even though the political winds are very tumultuous and even though the Supreme Court has put a hold on the Clean Power Plan temporarily. I am very confident that we are going to meet our Paris commitments and we're going to continue to move away from coal and accelerate clean energy because it is built on this very robust and powerful and resilient grassroots foundation.
Are you seeing that in terms of the day-to-day work with Sierra Club members and activists and the responses that they get from lawmakers, or is it still, you know, we kind of got to get it done outside of certainly Congress and outside even of the state legislatures? How are you seeing that play out?
We were getting half of our electricity from coal when we joined forces with Bloomberg Philanthropies.
That's right.
And that's now down to about 33% in 2015, which is the lowest level in recorded history. Which in 2016 now, the projections are that coal is going to lose its seat as the number one source of energy in the U.S. for the first time ever. And so this is a revolution in how we make energy in this country, and we suddenly have a lot of decision makers that are seeing the writing on the wall, and they are seeing that innovation and economic opportunity and job opportunities are coming from clean energy, especially from wind and solar. And here where I live in West Virginia, we are actually starting to have a real candid conversation about how to diversify our economy away from coal. And, you know, make no mistake about it, I mean, the coal industry was incredibly politically influential both nationally and in a lot of states for a century, and they are not giving up that power lightly, and it is a real struggle in not just West Virginia but a whole lot of other states to sort of break out of that box and envision a new future. But we just see far fewer political leaders that feel handcuffed and beholden to the coal industry these days, and we do see people racing to seize that clean energy opportunity.
Sierra Club has now driven coal, as you said, down as a share of the electricity mix to 30% or 40%, which is an incredible achievement. You know, you've closed something like 230 coal plants. There's a couple hundred remaining. What's the universe that actually could be closed in the short term? What can we expect to see?
So if we can get to a point, which is our goal by 2017, of having half the coal plants in the U.S. announced to retire, that's important for a couple reasons. One, because it will really keep us on track to meet our Paris commitment, even as the Clean Power Plan is making its way through the court. So it ensures that we still have momentum, which is absolutely essential. We cannot slow down even for a second as the Clean Power Plan works its way through the courts. So it's important for that reason. And it's also important because if you look at the climate science, it's not just that we need to meet the targets of the Clean Power Plan. We actually have to exceed them if we're going to avoid some catastrophic climate conditions for our little girls and the
yeah.
world that they're going to grow up in. So so we need to meet those targets and exceed them. And right now, this is one of the most surefire ways to get there.
Yeah. I think one of the proudest accomplishments of the campaign so far is the lives saved. If you look at when the campaign was launched and there were 13,000 people a year dying prematurely from the pollution from coal-fired power, and now that number is down by more than 5,000 people.
Absolutely. One of the numbers that always strikes me the most is that we're close to now almost 100,000 asthma attacks prevented every year. And, you know, as a mom, my daughter does not have asthma, but I have to think that watching your child struggle to breathe has got to be one of the most terrifying things you could ever experience. And, you know, thinking about how hard that would make for your child to keep up in school and all the work he would miss and all the fear and the stress around it, and just knowing that there are so many more kids suffering from so many less asthma attacks as a result of this work. I take a lot of heart in the progress that we've made, and I'm really driven by all of those kids out there that are still suffering needlessly.
Yeah. And when we talk about health impact, I'm really reminded of the young woman from Alexandria, Virginia, Ami, who joined us at the event last year where Bloomberg Philanthropies announced the big additional investment in the Beyond Coal campaign. And I remember she spoke so eloquently about growing up around air pollution caused by coal plants and the health impact that that had on her and her family, and it really drove her to engage in these issues. So here's a clip from that event.
When I was younger, I developed atopic dermatitis and started getting severe reactions to dust and smog. However, now it is starting to cause more respiratory problems with symptoms similar to asthma. A couple years ago, I was traveling to New Jersey to visit my grandparents. It started out like any other car trip, long and boring. But when we passed by a coal plant, my breath became constricted and I started wheezing. This event opened my eyes to the realities of the air pollution coal plants cause. I could no longer travel without a face mask, and I was at the point where further exposure would lead to asthma.
You know, I have to tell you, I just actually went and spoke at her high school, believe it or not. She asked me to come and speak to her high school. Yep. And she's a rising senior, and she is looking into colleges, and she wants to go into the medical field and you know, be a scientist who's developing medical breakthroughs for the next generation of folks. So she's suffering from breathing problems and lived near, again, a coal plant without a scrubber right outside of Washington, D.C. that is now retired thanks to our advocacy and is not only breathing easier, but, you know, she may be the person that finds the cure to cancer or whatnot that saves us all. So one story of one person and just a really great reminder of how we do this, why we do this work.
That's amazing. So for listeners of this podcast, who it would be great to engage in climate change and advocacy, how do you recommend that they plug in to the campaign?
Well, there are, as I mentioned a little earlier, there is still a lot of work to do. So we may have a third of the coal plants in the U.S. announced to retire, but that means two-thirds of them are not. And even in states where there aren't as many coal plants, there's still a lot of work to do on ramping up clean energy. And that's happening in pretty much every state in the country. So you can go to beyondcoal.org and contact us. You can find out the status of the work in your state. But I think the bottom line is you can do this work anywhere, whether it's finding out if you live near a coal plant that might be vulnerable to retire, whether it's getting involved at the state level, whether it's getting your city or town to commit to 100% clean energy. We have a Ready for 100 campaign that's pushing cities and towns to make those commitments. There is something you can do wherever you are if this is an issue that inspires you.
From a philanthropic point of view, it's part of the reason it's so compelling is that it really is a scalable campaign. So with each additional dollar, Sierra Club is hiring a grassroots organizer or a smart lawyer to go into local proceedings and get this work done. And it's really that impact per dollar is really, I think, an inspiring piece of the story as well.
Again, as the mom of a little girl, as somebody who lives in West Virginia, who has spent most of my life in Appalachia, knowing that we can be successful anywhere, including conservative states and coal-dependent states, is something that gives me a lot of hope for the future and a lot of optimism that we can solve some of these big climate and energy problems.
It's so true, and what Sierra Club provides through this campaign is the seat at the table for all of us who breathe in those decisions, which is a pretty important contribution.
Exactly, and a seat at the table for our kids who are going to be the ones who are going to have to live in this world we are making for them right now.
That's exactly right. Well, thank you so much, Marianne. It's wonderful always to talk to you and to hear more about the successful work of the Beyond Coal campaign.
Well, thank you very much for the conversation and for all of your support. And it's, you know, I think we can both look our little girls in the eye and let them know we're doing everything we can to leave them a better world.
Well, that's all we have time for in this episode of Follow the Data. Thank you for listening and sharing in our mission at Bloomberg Philanthropies. Please follow us on Twitter at Bloomberg.org. That's Bloomberg, D-O-T-O-R-G, for information on our next episode. As our founder, Mike Bloomberg, says, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Until next time, keep following the data. Special thanks to producers and editors Ivy Lee and Lindsay Firestone and music composer Mark Pirro.